I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. If you watch a lot of Tucker Carlson Tonight on Fox News, some patterns begin to emerge. Carlson constantly rails against what he calls the ruling class. He frames issues as conflicts between you and them. He sees black and brown immigrants and refugees as a threat to the country. He blames feminism and changing sex and gender norms for emasculating men. He defends white nationalism, downplays the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, and targets women of color. Our guest Nicholas Confessori and a team of his colleagues at the New York Times viewed or read transcripts of all 1,150 episodes of Carlson's show, starting when it made its debut in November 2016 through 2021. The Times talked with friends, current and former Fox employees, most of whom spoke off the record, for their three-part series, American Nationalist, published last weekend. It's about how Tucker Carlson built his ratings, was given free rein at Fox, and has carried on the nationalist politics of Trumpism without Trump. Nicholas Confessori is a political investigative reporter for the New York Times and joins us on Radio Times. Nice to have you back with us on the show.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Let me just make sure our listeners can join our conversation, and we certainly invite them to do so. You can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499, especially if you watch Tucker Carlson's show. To you, Nicholas Confessori, what did you want to learn about Tucker Carlson that you didn't know?
Well, I wanted to understand how the show worked on the inside. I wanted to know what were the ingredients in its success. It's the highest rated show in history in cable news, or it was at one time. And I wanted to know where the story that you hear on Tucker Carlson Tonight comes from, and why it's so potent, and why it's been so influential in American politics in the last couple of years. And so we set out to do two things. We tried to find out more about Tucker Carlson, where he comes from, how his beliefs were formed. And we also tried to get inside Fox, inside the show, to understand how it came together. And what we found really surprised us.
Well, I do want to talk about all of that. You talked to a lot of people. You didn't talk to Tucker Carlson. What would you have asked him if you had been able to talk to him?
I wanted to know what really turned him against immigration. What turned him from a supporter of immigration, from more of a libertarian conservative perspective on the issue, to first a skeptic and then a critic and then an adopter of conspiracy theories about immigration, which is where he is now. There are some clues in his history. He's been on TV for a very long time, for more than two decades now. Yeah. You can find little clues. But for all his words spoken and written over the years, I couldn't find anything where he wrote a lot or clearly about his turn on immigration. There are some hints. And one of them is what happened in his home state of California. Which was once a swing state, right? In his youth, was a swing state.
That's right. Ronald Reagan,
GOP,
right?
Governors, yeah, and Pete Wilson, and so you know, he has talked a little bit. He has touched on the idea that the rising Hispanic population in California and its conversion to a Democratic stronghold is part of what convinced him this was a bad thing.
Well, let me play a clip, and I should say to our listeners, the series includes a series of clips and montages from Tucker Carlson's show. This is from December 13th, 2018, where he's claiming that immigration is making the United States poorer and dirtier. Let's give it a listen.
Our leaders demand that you shut up and accept this. We have a moral obligation to admit the world's poor, they tell us, even if it makes our own country poorer and dirtier and more divided. Immigration is a form of atonement. Previous leaders of our country committed sins. We must pay for those sins by welcoming an endless chain of migrant caravans.
And Nick, as you say, this is a theme that he has really hammered over the years.
That's right. And look, let's pause here and say two things. First of all, this is not true.
We're going to say that a lot during this hour, but yes.
And
no,
it's notable.
Ahead.
Yeah, and it's notable, if you listen to him talking, track how he abstracts the argument to they. Because there is almost nobody in the Democratic leadership, in Congress, in the party, possibly a few activists somewhere, who actually make the argument he is saying that they make. He's putting words in their mouth. He's doing his spin on their argument. But since he's not attributing it to any one person, you can't actually rebut it, right? And it sounds good. And the second thing is, you know, and we'll come back to this later, I hope, but his basic thesis that immigration is the cause of all that ails the working class in America, especially the white working class, is just vastly overblown. It's mostly wrong or lacking in evidence, and it's greatly exaggerated in the few places where there's some truth to it. So we'll come back to that.
Well, I mean, we can stay with it. Talking about immigration and refugees, it's really largely about people from Africa or Central America or South America or Somalia, as you say in this piece in particular. These are black and brown refugees and immigrants.
He has a striking obsession, I would almost say, with Somali migrants and refugees who have settled in Maine, about an hour from where he lives, in Lewiston, Maine. It's an old mill town in the Northeast. And like a lot of mill towns, it's a little down to the heels. It's seen better days, but it's doing fine. And, you know, in the early Bush administration in the 2000s, during the, you know, the aftermath of the Civil War there that was still ongoing, there were Somalis who settled in Atlanta, or who were settled there by refugee agencies, and then decided it was too crime-ridden, too dangerous. And so they looked for places that were safer and had cheap housing. And they sent out advanced scouts, and they ended up in Portland and then Lewiston. And so there are now a community of some thousand, it's in the single-digit thousands, of Somali refugees and their first-generation American kids who live in Lewiston. And on Carlson's show, he states as fact that their presence has made Lewiston poorer. It's hurt Lewiston. And he says it's a clear fact. It can't be rebutted. Well, actually, you can go look for facts. You can go do reporting. And I went and I talked to the Maine Department of Labor. And I said, so what's the deal here? Is he right? Because I was curious. Maybe he's right.
Sure.
And he wasn't. what we actually see is that unemployment rate, for example, in Lewiston, Maine, pretty much tracks the unemployment rate in the rest of the state, right? It goes up when it goes up in the state, it goes down when it goes down in the state. There's no jump in unemployment because the Somalis showed up. If you look at economic growth in Lewiston, not a huge boom when the Somalis arrived, but not a huge depression when the Somalis, you know, had arrived. It's basically been sort of steady state since the end and the decline of the mill era there. And so what happens when a bunch of immigrants come into a place? They create some competition for jobs. They also create demand for new goods and services and jobs, right? And what we see in the economic theory is that these effects kind of more or less even out. Not completely, and not everywhere, but that's kind of the big picture. And that's what's happened in Lewiston.
And we should say that, and I didn't know this until I read your series, that he lives in Maine, and that's basically where his show comes out of. Let me just leave that there because I do want to play another montage from the series, and this is from the series, and it's highlighting how Tucker Carlson uses you and them when referring to the ruling class, and this is another theme that comes from his show. Let's give it a listen, and then we'll talk to Nicholas Confessori.
They care more about identity politics than they care about your life. They care more about preventing a border wall than they do about raising the wages of American workers. They care more about putting Roger Stone in prison than about punishing looters and arsonists. They care far more about foreigners than about their own people. They seem to care more about Venezuela than they care about this country. They care about Afghans far more than they care about you. They don't care about you, and they're saying that as clearly as they possibly can. They don't care about your kids, and they really don't care about your grandkids.
Who's the they, Nick, that they're talking about, the ruling class that he's referring to there?
It's whoever he wants it to be. If Carlson had to actually find a quote of Joe Biden saying, you know, I don't care about you. I don't care about your kids. I hate you. Of course he would be able to find that. So again, it's this abstracted language of his invention. And, you know, he would argue that their actions show that. But that's a question of debate, right? And I think it's probably wrong. But the, you know, this kind of ruling class is whoever is in the news. It's Joe Biden. It's AOC. It's Kamala Harris. It's Chelsea Clinton. It's Colin Kaepernick. It's like anybody who is promoting something or has an argument that he doesn't like and can slip into his narrative. The narrative never changes. The narrative is always the same. They want to destroy you.
You write that Tucker Carlson hosts, and I'm quoting here, what may be the most racist show in the history of cable news and the most successful. What's the connection between the two? How are those two linked?
I think they are linked exactly as we state in the story. I do want to back up a little bit on that claim. It's a big one.
It is.
And, you know, there are some listeners who will say, come on now, that's crazy. You know, is this just the New York Times saying that? And we do live in an era in which the definition of what counts as racist seems to expand a lot and the word gets thrown around a lot. So let's back this up with our reporting. He doesn't use slurs on the air. He's not wearing a white hood, right? And he will tell his viewers, I'm against racism. I'm against prejudice. I believe in what Dr. King believes, is what he says. But the show teaches fear and loathing. He would tell you that protesters who would like the police to stop killing black people are trying to destroy America, or that refugees from Afghanistan, people who helped our soldiers during the war, are coming here to destroy America, and that immigration of all kinds is going to destroy America. And furthermore, and this is the bigger point, since he got the 8 p.m. slot on Fox in 2017, he has devoted more and more of his show to a set of ideas and themes and conspiracy theories that he's borrowing from the bottom depths of the internet, from the very far right, from actual racist and white nationalist websites, nativist websites. He takes those ideas, gives them a light polish, puts them through the Fox machine, and makes great TV out of it. The most important of these conspiracy theories is replacement theory. This is the idea that we have an elite cabal of leaders, Republicans and Democrats, that want to import people, in this case from Latin America and Africa, pliant, obedient, brown-skinned people, to crush American citizens. And he has repeated this on more than 400 episodes of his show. That comes straight from white nationalists and anti-Semites who have been developing these ideas for decades.
Well, Nick, hold on to that thought only because I do want to play a clip from the series that speaks to this replacement theory that Tucker Carlson talks about. But quickly, let me reintroduce you. That's Nicholas Confessori, political and investigative reporter for The New York Times, author of the three-part series on Tucker Carlson titled American Nationalist. And again, you can always join our conversation. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can call us, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking with Nicholas Confessori, political and investigative reporter for The New York Times. And we're talking about a series that was published over the weekend called American Nationalist. And it's about how Fox News' Tucker Carlson became the most popular cable news host in the country, using fear and grievance to win over and build his audience. Nick, you had mentioned replacement theory. Let me just play a clip. And this is more recently. This is from just about a year ago. Tucker Carlson is actually talking to another host at Fox about this great replacement theory, as it is called, claiming that non-white immigrants are being brought to the country to replace white voters. Let's give it a quick listen.
Now, I know that the left and all the little gatekeepers on Twitter become literally hysterical if you use the term replacement, if you suggest that the Democratic Party is trying to replace the current electorate, the voters now casting ballots, with new people, more obedient voters from the third world. But they become hysterical because that's what's happening, actually. Let's just say it, that's true. If this was happening in your house, if you were in sixth grade, for example, and without telling you, your parents adopted a bunch of new siblings and gave them brand new bikes and let them stay up later and help them with their homework and gave them twice the allowance that they gave you, you would say to your siblings, you know, I think we're being replaced by kids that our parents love more. And it would be kind of hard to argue against you because look at the evidence.
We should say it's not true, but I have to say to you, Nick, I mean, he has a very colorful way of describing replacement theory, making it very personal. The idea that your parents would take in other children and treat them better.
That's right. I mean, it's a powerful metaphor, and he uses it for a reason. You know, you asked earlier what's the link between the content of the show and the ratings. And I'll tell you what a former Fox employee told me. They said, how do you get ratings in cable TV? Anger. But what's better than anger? Fear.
Hmm.
And what we see on this show, it's not just grievance and resentment. You are meant to watch this show and be afraid. And to watch more. And to believe that there's no one else who will tell you the truth and no other network that will allow the truth to be told than Tucker Carlson and Fox. That's the programming strategy.
And be afraid because what? They are coming for you?
He basically uses those exact words talking about Black Lives Matter, right? And when he did that at the height of the protests in 2020, there was some statements out of Fox Media Relations saying, oh, he was clearly referring to Democratic leaders as if that's like any better. But of course, you know, it is what it is. He said what he said. They're coming for you, right? This is not language that you would even have seen as much on Bill O'Reilly back when he had that show. I was talking with an expert on Fox, CNN's Brian Stelter, and Stelter had an interesting observation, you know, some time ago about the difference between O'Reilly and Carlson. And O'Reilly's shtick was, who can you trust? Me. And Carlson's shtick is, who can you trust? No one. it's powerful. It's powerful TV.
Can Tucker Carlson say anything on Fox and get away with it? You talk about his relationship with Lachlan Murdoch, who seems to give him a pass on most things. Or maybe everything.
I'm going to contest your framing of that because I think it's important. He's not being given a pass. And I think that a liberal-leaning viewer of the show or more likely a person who sees clips from it and says, I can't believe he said that. It's going to get in trouble, right? Is fundamentally misunderstanding what is going on. The edginess, that walking up to the line, is the point. It is intentional. They're all doing it on purpose. And sure, they have to back cleanup once in a while when he goes a little over the line. But walking up to the line and crossing it once in a while is the programming strategy. And really, it's the same in almost any media ecosystem. The closer you get to the line, the higher your engagement is. That's true on Facebook. It's true on Twitter. It's true in the old tabloid news. And it's true on Fox.
Well, you also say, and I know about ratings because I look at ratings for this particular show. We get them in, hour and 15-minute increments. He gets his ratings, perhaps this is true for all of Fox, minute-by-minute ratings. So he can watch, or his people can watch and see people tuning in and tuning out, and then, I guess, what, refining stories, refining tone message in order to keep people watching.
That's right. So in the TV business, the most common currency of ratings is quarter hours.
Right.
You get to see what your block did, how your segment went. And if you really push, if you're really curious, sometimes people at your network will open the hood and give you the minute by minutes, which shows you every minute performance of the show. Now, Fox is a huge consumer of ratings data. And let's be clear, all cable news channels are pretty obsessed with ratings.
Sure.
But I think from my reporting, that where the minute-by-minute ratings might once have been used to workshop a new show or figure out, you know, we're losing a lot of audience going from the C to the D block. How can we fix that? What's the problem there? Or we're getting a drop-off from the 6 to the 7 o'clock hour. Let's try to fix that. Over time, in the last few years, in the Trump era, the minute-by-minutes became just a standard part of every decision for every show, from the dayside news shows to the opinion primetime shows. And as one person put it, every second that goes on the air on that network is now scrutinized. Wow. It's a fine-tuned machine for high ratings and making money, and they're really good at it.
Let me read some comments, and then I do want to play another clip. Here's a comment from Jim. He says, I watch Tucker Carlson. He is the most hateful and vicious person. I believe he follows the idea of Joseph Goebbels, who believed that if you repeat a lie often enough, it becomes the truth. Let me just read a couple of more. One from James. I don't understand how the ultra-nationalists, the people who profess to be the most patriotic, seem to hate our country the most. An email from Sue. Tucker's use of sin and atonement is drawing from the Christian base and wondered whether he uses this rhetoric before working at Fox. Also, does Tucker really believe what he preaches on TV? And let me just pick up on that last question from Sue. And I think it is a question that kind of hangs over whether what he is saying is what he truly believes, or it's for ratings or for attention or for all three. What do you think?
I think it's all of the above. I don't think there's actually that simple answer to that. What I can tell you is that I think he has genuinely transitioned from an early set of beliefs, of libertarian conservative beliefs, such as they were. I don't think he was a big ideologue as a young writer, to increasingly paleo-conservative ideas, an older American tradition of a suspicion of foreign entanglements. Suspicion of immigrants, a kind of populism. But, you know, he has clearly moved in that direction over the years. You can see it simply by reading what he has said on the air over the two decades that he has been on and off TV. We see it. What's really different to me is he has moved from debating about the effects of immigration and whether the policy should be looser or tighter, which I think is a debate everyone has in this country, and is a totally reasonable one. And there, you know, I think opposing illegal immigration is a majority position in this country. He's gone from that to this conspiracy that people who favor a gentler policy at the border or want to provide some status for dreamers are out to destroy the country. And in his mind, in his telling at least, they know that's what they're trying to do. They want to destroy the country. He's not just saying, I think these policies are bad or that they will have this effect. He's not even saying that the people who advocate these policies are wrong about what will be the effect. He says the intended purpose of all of this is to destroy America, change your country, take it away from you. It's a very dark idea. There isn't any basis for it. The closest he came was when he was challenged on this. He came back with some video from Joe Biden as vice president that had to be edited so dishonestly that it was almost hilarious to watch. Like, it was just clearly deeply ripped out of context and chopped up. But that is the language. And I think if you are making $15 million a year trying to find an edgier and edgier and higher rating version of the thing you believe, and you find that dipping into this well of arcane, weird stuff on The Daily Stormer and Stormfront and Reddit is going to give you that edge, then you sort of believe it, but also use it, and it becomes what you believe. And I'll quote two people who I quote in the story. I spoke to two former colleagues of Carlson at The Daily Caller, the conservative tabloid that he founded in 2010. And I asked them, like, these kinds of questions, like, how much of this is, like, sort of, you know, young people, you know, joking about this stuff? This is back in The Daily Caller when there were a bunch of closet white nationalists working there. And how much of it is their belief? And two people independently quoted a Kurt Vonnegut novel. And they said, we have to be careful what we pretend to be, because we are what we pretend to be.
Wow.
I'm not quoting it exactly, but that's the gist.
I get what they're saying there. That's Nicholas Confessori. He's a political and investigative reporter at the New York Times, author of this three-part series that was published last weekend about Tucker Carlson, and it's called American Nationalist. Let me play another clip, and I should say to our listeners again that most of the clips that we have are taken from the series, and this is Tucker Carlson saying that white supremacy wasn't a real problem and was a hoax. This was on his show August 7th, 2019. I should add it came a few days after the mass shooting in El Paso, which left 22 people dead. Investigator said that the shooter was motivated by a white supremacist manifesto that was worried about a, quote, Hispanic invasion.
If you were to assemble a list, a hierarchy of concerns, of problems this country faces, where would white supremacy be on the list? Right up there with Russia, probably. It's actually not a real problem in America. The combined membership of every white supremacist organization in this country, would they be able to fit inside a college football stadium? I mean, seriously. This is a country where the average person is getting poorer, where the suicide rate is spiking. White supremacy, that's the problem. This is a hoax. Just like the Russia hoax, it's a conspiracy theory used to divide the country and keep a hold on power. That's exactly what's going on.
And Nick, a number of advertisers left his show after those comments. And that has happened in after other comments as well.
That's right. I mean, you know, that kind of rhetoric is not what premium advertisers want to advertise against. And when credible people are saying, this guy is borrowing stuff from white nationalist websites, Chrysler, you know, or Pfizer is going to say, I'm not sure I want my ads for cars and pharmaceuticals against that kind of content. And so the irony, though, is that the show has done quite well on ad revenue. And this is why. Yes, they've lost these blue chip advertisers who haven't really come back in force over the years. But ratings are really high.
Yeah.
And because of the fragmentation of the TV audience in recent years because of streaming, there aren't that many big audiences left, right? And Carlson doesn't have the biggest, but it's a big one. It's more than 3 million people in any given day. And when you have that big an audience, there are advertisers who are really going to want to reach them. And these are mostly direct-to-consumer advertisers, people selling supplements and pillows, as in the case of MyPillow, which is a big advertiser. And these are companies that aren't really vulnerable to like boycott pressure because they don't have their stuff, because the bulk of their business is direct-to-consumer. And they actually want the intensity of the show. They want the intensity of the bond that a host like Carlson creates with his viewer to have that transfer onto their product. And so what we report, according to estimates from iSpot, which is an analytics company for TV ads, in every year since 2018, when the boycotts really picked up, Carlson has bought in more estimated annual advertising revenue than any other show on Fox. This is while he's being boycotted.
Amazing.
So when you have the audience, you can do things.
Let me read an email from Jason. And I have to say he's critical of you, Nicholas Confessori, in the New York Times. He says, the mere existence of this New York Times series on Tucker Carlson reveals the papers and the author's bias against someone they don't like or agree with. Can we look forward to a similar series critical of Rachel Maddow or Joy Reid? The New York Times can no longer be trusted as an unbiased newspaper. And I'm sure you've heard that multiple times before. Is there something, though, unique from your perspective about Tucker Carlson that you don't see or hear from Joy Reid or Rachel Maddow?
Well, first I'll say it's a free country, and
Sure. Anyone
who doesn't like the story is welcome to say so. They can email me and tell me what they think is wrong about it. I wish your listener would be more specific. He just kind of waves his hand and says, the existence proves something. And if your listener can show me that Rachel Maddow is borrowing content in hundreds of episodes from white nationalist websites, I would be happy to write that story. Send me that tip. I will pursue it. I will publish it. That's not what's happening. There's no obligation here to write an equivalent story about some other figure who is doing something else, right? We follow the facts. We follow the reporting, and we see where it goes. But what I hear in that email is a common skepticism on the right, from good people, reasonable people,
sure,
who think that the Times is out to get Republicans or out to get Carlson and Fox. And my answer to that would be, well, don't take my word for it. Look in the second story in the series, and you will see that time and again, employees and executives at Fox were warning the company that something was wrong here. They were telling the high command, and they were making some waves internally and saying, what he is saying is wrong. I find it personally offensive, in the words of these people. It's hurting my ability to report the news for Fox News without fear or favor. And in at least one case, a high-ranking official at Fox, the president of the Fox Business Channel at the time, told his fellow executives that a segment or a set of segments that Carlson was doing on farm murders in South Africa was something he had ripped from racist websites, from neo-Nazi websites. This is Fox's own C-suite executive. This is not me, Nick Confessori at the New York Times. The alarm is coming from inside the building. And time again, these people were shut down, told to go away, and overruled. And so that tells me two things. One is, I'm onto something. And two is that Carlson's show does what it does because Fox wants him to do it.
And let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation with our guest, Nicholas Confessori, again, political and investigative reporter for The New York Times, author of a three-part series that was published last weekend on Tucker Carlson titled American Nationalist. It's about how Tucker Carlson became the most popular cable news host in history and how he has used his show to trade in fears and grievance. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen talking with Nicholas Confessori about Tucker Carlson. Let me play another clip, and this is from February 24th of this year, 2022, at the start of Russia's attack on Ukraine. And this is Tucker Carlson questioning America's hatred of Putin.
What is this really about? Why do I hate Putin so much? Has Putin ever called me a racist? Has he threatened to get me fired for disagreeing with him? Has he shipped every middle-class job in my town to Russia? Did he manufacture a worldwide pandemic that wrecked my business and kept me indoors for 2 years? Is he teaching my children to embrace racial discrimination? Is he making fentanyl? Is he trying to snuff out Christianity? Does he eat dogs? These are fair questions, and the answer to all of them is no. Vladimir Putin didn't do any of that. So why does permanent Washington hate him so much?
I don't even know where to begin with that, Nicholas Confessori. But I should add, and one of our listeners makes this comment as well, is that a number of Tucker Carlson's statements about Putin are now being played on Russia propaganda broadcast as this war is going on. One of the things that I hear in that, and he does this a lot, he meaning Tucker Carlson does this a lot, he asks a lot of questions. He frames things in terms of questions. Can you unpack what we just heard?
Absolutely. What you just heard is pay no attention to the thing that is actually happening. Come back into my world and pay attention and be mad at the right people. What you hear in that clip is Carlson saying, everyone wants to be mad at Putin because he's invading Ukraine and his troops are committing war crimes and he's invading a sovereign country. But no, that's not really a problem. And don't let it bother you. Come back over here and focus on the real enemy at home, the ruling class, the people who are importing fentanyl to kill working class Americans. That's what he's doing. He's almost pastoral, and I say this in the story. Mm-hmm. He tells his viewers that this thing you were feeling it is okay, it is right. You should not be worried. You should not listen to that voice in your head that says, am I wrong? Should I rethink this? He says, no. Come back over here. Hate the right people. You should hate the right people. These are the people to hate. That's his story. And what you saw there is actually a classic tactic on the show. No matter what is happening in the news, what the story is, Carlson is very skilled at pivoting it back to his narrative, the ruling class. Elsewhere in that segment you played, he says that the reason we're going to war in Ukraine is for Joe Biden to reward the government of Ukraine, people in Ukraine, for giving his son business or something. It's very tangled.
For Hunter
Biden. Yeah, for Hunter Biden. Again, no evidence for this assertion. It's patently wrong. But the point is, don't believe what they're telling you. Actually, there's a secret key here, a skeleton key. Focus on the real enemy at home.
You make an interesting observation, and Sean, we know about Sean Hannity's relationship with then-President Trump, really his confidant in many ways and confessor and you know, person that Trump would call. But you see Carlson kind of has kept his distance from Trump, so he embraced Trumpism but not Trump. How did he do that?
Well, he had this interesting problem when he got the 8 o'clock hour, when he moved into the middle of prime time in 2017. Sean Hannity at that time was the top-rated host on Fox. He was in the 10 o'clock hour. He would soon move to the 9 o'clock hour. And his show was Trump TV. You know, it was defending the president. It was defending Trump against his enemies in the press and then against the Mueller investigation. And the various prosecutions and the Russia investigation. And, Carlson, he had to find a way to reach the same audience, but not just repeat what people were going to hear on this more highly rated show later on. And the solution that played out when you watch the show in the subsequent months is Trumpism without Trump. It was stories that were sometimes weird, as one friend told us, but played to this theme to elicit fears of a trampled-on American culture. And one great example that people kept telling me about to look to was a segment called Gypsies Coming to America. Hmm. And gypsies is a term, it's probably a slur these days, for Roma, right, people in Europe. There were some Roma refugees, not many, who had sought asylum because they were discriminated against or said they were in their home country. They'd ended up in a town called California, Pennsylvania. And in the way that the small town rumor mill sometimes has of making big things out of small things, one child took a pee in the playground and suddenly everyone in town was hearing that there was an epidemic of people chopping the heads off chickens on doorsteps and peeing and pooping on the sidewalks. This was a perfect story for Tucker Carlson. And he ran a whole segment on this very minor thing happening in a small town, a small city. And he said that he claimed to his audience that there was poop all over the sidewalks, like sidewalks covered in poop, completely invented, total fiction. And then he made some comments about how this is the people who have been around Europe for 1,000 years without assimilating, like what makes us think they're going to assimilate here?
Hmm.
And you have to ask yourself why a guy with a top-rated cable show would focus his fire on a very small number of refugees with a made-up story. And I think the answer is it worked for the theme.
Let me read a couple of more comments. A tweet from David: the playbook and business plan were created and successfully practiced by Rush Limbaugh, presenting himself as the sage who knows what the other side secretly thinks. Their secret bad motives, they don't care about you. A comment from Steve: three federal investigations found that Putin's objective was to divide the American people and make them lose faith in the electoral system. That is exactly what Carlson does. Here's a comment from Edward saying, replacement theory isn't a theory. It's reality. It's called outsourcing. And my job, like others, were outsourced. You need badly to talk about regular folks. Tucker isn't always right, and he talks to the silent majority who will have their say in November. I mean, there is a difference between outsourcing jobs, and that clearly happens. And the idea of black and brown refugees and immigrants coming in and essentially sort of ruining our country and ruining our economy. Nick, do you want to respond to our listener there? And then I do want to play another clip.
Yeah, I think you raise a good point. Certainly Tucker Carlson provides one answer to the question of what's happening to working class people in this country. And he says the answer is these black and brown people coming into the country. That's the problem. Now, I think if you study actual facts closely, you'd be talking about a much broader array of issues. You don't hear Carlson talking very much about outsourcing. And that's a legitimate issue. It's an economic one. It has a lot of potency. Doesn't have quite the rage potency, though, of an elite cabal is importing black and brown people to replace you and destroy you and stop you from having babies. He doesn't talk about the minimum wage. He doesn't talk about the decline of unions, unless it's to get in a bank shot at Jeff Bezos by having on the young man who successfully organized a warehouse for Amazon. If you were doing a show that was really looking at what the evidence tells us are some of the big issues. You would talk about addiction and fentanyl and opioids for sure. And Carlson does that. But you would be looking at a bigger set of economic forces. And at the same time, there are people on both sides of the aisle who talk about those things. Certainly a lot of Democrats have been talking about outsourcing for a long time. Certainly a lot of Democrats have been talking about the minimum wage for a long time. And so it just seems to me that if that was your genuine conviction and your genuine worry, you would be painting with a much broader set of colors. But what we see on Tucker Carlson tonight is this relentless focus on immigration as the cause of almost every problem. Declining birth rates and rising housing prices, job loss and wage stagnation. There's just not that much evidence behind those assertions.
Well, let me play another montage. And again, this is from the New York Times series highlighting Tucker Carlson's focus on the decline in male achievement, the crisis in masculinity, including falling testosterone levels. Let's give it a listen.
Well, American men are in deep trouble. If men are keeping women down, why are women doing so much better than men? If you destroy men or complete the destruction of men, they're pretty close to being destroyed, I would say. How does it help women exactly? Shouldn't women be helping men to be better? What they're trying to suppress is masculinity itself. Actual male testosterone levels have fallen dramatically in the past 20 years. Modern life is making people stressed and miserable. It's also causing what appears to be biological collapse of the species. The danger is not overpopulation. In fact, it's the opposite. It's plummeting birth rates. If society can't reproduce itself, it has, by definition, failed.
And let me just add that he had and I guess I should put this in quotation marks, a documentary where he touts this, I don't even know how to describe it, using a red light aimed at a man's private parts, and somehow that would increase testosterone levels. Completely discredited Nicholas Confessori. But, this is another theme that we hear on Tucker Carlson's show.
That's right. And look, again, let's just say for the viewers, for the listeners,
sure.
There is not evidence that testosterone levels are plummeting. For one thing, it's actually a very hard thing to study. It's not true. But you see in that progression of statements that you just played, how we move from, more women have jobs and their pay relative to men is improving. We move from that to declining sperm levels and society will collapse because it can't reproduce itself.
Right.
Remember, if you're looking for the ratings, you always got to turn it up to 11. It's like it's like that Spinal Tap part, right? Yeah. This one goes to 11. I mean, Tucker is always at 11. You got to turn the dial up to get the viewers to stay hooked. It's got to be bigger. You got to write it big, as we say in the news business. And Tucker always writes it big. You know, this is a major theme. And this one probably sounds a little more familiar. You know, you can, as one listener had said, you can find Rush Limbaugh complaining about feminazis. Although I would say that Limbaugh was a little more of a comedian. The show could be mean if you're a listener who leans left, but there's a little bit of a chuckle on that show. There's not much of a chuckle anymore on Tucker Carlson Tonight. And when you look at the theme of how this country is now a place where to be a male is a terrible thing, how males are victims, you actually see once again that theme has a big place in the cosmology of white nationalism. Now, it's not the only place where that theme exists, right? And we should be clear here. Some ideas have more than one home. And just because a bunch of white nationalists are saying it doesn't mean that's the only place that it lives. But I will say that what you see in the particular ideology of the far right, you know, these kind of white nationalist types, this is all intertwined for them. Fertility is like a big obsession with them. And so is immigration, and so is intermarriage, right? All these things kind of come together. And you can see Carlson takes a little version of that and pipes it into the show.
Let me squeeze one more clip on before we have to say goodbye. This is Senator Ted Cruz, and he appeared on Tucker Carlson Tonight on January 7th, 2022. To apologize for describing the January 6th attack as a, quote, violent terrorist attack on the Capitol. Let's give it a listen.
The reason the phrasing was sloppy is I have talked dozens, if not hundreds of times. I've drawn a distinction. I wasn't saying that the thousands of peaceful protesters supporting Donald Trump are somehow terrorists. I wasn't saying the millions of patriots across the country supporting President Trump are terrorists. And that's what a lot of people have misunderstood
that
comment.
Wait a second, but even your way, but hold on. What you just said doesn't make sense.
Tucker, I agree with you. It was a mistake to say that yesterday.
And we're almost out of time here, Nick, but it should be said that Tucker Carlson says it's an inside job from the FBI, which, of course, is wrong.
That's right. You know, on the show, in one episode, he claimed that a certain person was an FBI informant because they were, you know, shown in some court filing, and he speculated that this unnamed person was an FBI informant. Not long after that, he had her on his show, and it was the wife of one of the insurrectionists, who he now interviewed as though she was an innocent victim of prosecutorial overreach. There's no consistency here. What's interesting about that clip, though, Senator Cruz was right. What happened at the Capitol was violence. What happened on the Ellipse was protected First Amendment speech that day. The question that we're all asking and the question that the Jan 6 Committee is asking is, what is the real connection between the two, aside from the fact that some people who are at the Ellipse ended up breaking into the Capitol, breaking the law, committing acts of violence, trying to stop the lawful ascension of Joe Biden as president. But what's interesting there is Carlson wants the viewer to think that when somebody is getting prosecuted for breaking into the Capitol, they're being prosecuted for protesting lawfully at the Ellipse. That's what he wants the viewer to believe.
Well, we got to leave it there. Nicholas Confessori, thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Political and investigative reporter for The New York Times, author of the three-part series on Tucker Carlson titled American Nationalist. To replay this hour, many more hours of Radio Times, go to whyy.org and look for Radio Times under programs. You can also download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you for joining us.